If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're watching a Highwire Media podcast.
Welcome to the True Crime Never Sleeps show. I'm your host, Larry Lease. On today's episode, we continue our series, The Zodiac Files, diving into the ciphers. Before we get started, let me know your thoughts on this case in the comments section below. And with that, let's dive into today's episode. By the summer of 1969, Northern California's highways and lakeside pull-offs had become the stage for an unknown murderer whose identity and motives eluded both police and press. What had begun as a pair of seemingly random ambushes, a young couple gunned down on Lake Herman Road in December 1968, followed by another pair struck at Blue Rock Springs Park on Independence Day, evolved overnight from tragical local news into a puzzle of national fascination and dread. In those early months, newspapers printed body counts, but no suspect sketches. Radio broadcasts warned listeners to avoid secluded picnic spots. Sheriff's deputies drove rural roads in pairs, their headlights carving pools of suspicion out of darkness. Yet the killer remained a phantom, silent, unseen, leaving no fingerprints, and vanishing into the dark. Into that vacuum stepped the Zodiac. On August 1st, 1969, three unassuming Bay Area newspapers awakened to an extraordinary demand. Shortly before dawn, identical white envelopes, postmarked from Vallejo, landed in the mailrooms of the San Francisco Chronicle, the San Francisco Examiner, and Vallejo Times Herald. Each contained the same handwritten letter, its jagged block capitals spelling a single message. Dear Editor, this is the Zodiac speaking. By the way, have you cracked the last cipher I sent you? My name is... No weapon, no fresh crime scene, only paper and ink, and a chilling promise of further terror. Then, filling two-thirds of the page, a grid of 408 cryptic symbols awaited publication. Finally, in the bottom corner of the Zodiac's emblem, a cross divided by a circle. His personal signature sprayed in black ink. The newspapers faced an agonizing choice. Their presses were designed to inform the public, not to serve as mouthpieces for a killer's propaganda. Yet, police urged them to comply. If the cipher hid clues about the killer's identity, his mindset, his next target, decoding it could save lives. Editors and publishers, balancing ethics, public safety, and commercial pressures, decided in unison they would print the Zodiac's demands exactly as written. By morning, the Bay Area was electrified. Men in business suits clustered around newsstands, housewives clipped ciphers from the kitchen table, teenagers traded photocopies in high school hallways. The Zodiac had harnessed the power of the press to project his terror beyond the crime scenes, transforming local tragedies into a shared region-wide crisis of fear. As dawn broke over the Golden Gate, two cast-iron truths emerged. First, that the Zodiac... crime spree was not merely a string of isolated killings, but a concerted campaign of psychological warfare. And second, that these letters and ciphers were the killer's strongest weapons, beyond bullets and blades. His words could ravage the public psyche. In this episode, we'll retrace those early steps from the vacuum of frustration left by anonymous murders to the Zodiac's dramatic letter that echoed across front pages, and show how a single envelope changed the course of modern crime reporting and serial killer profiling forever. Just after dawn on August 1st, 1969, the San Francisco Chronicle's mailroom clerk, Gloria Brown, performed her morning routine, sorting subscriber notices, tallying press releases, when she noticed an odd trio of envelopes. Each was unmarked, save for a neat Vallejo postmark in the return address field labeled simply Zodiac. Brown slit the first envelope with a blade, peered inside, and found a sheet of unlined, cream-colored stationery folded twice. The letter began in the center of the page, its block capital razor-shaped. Dear Editor, This is the Zodiac speaking. By the way, have you cracked the last cipher I sent you? My name is... Brown's fingers trembled as she unfolded the second sheet. Below the message lay a precise 20 by 20 grid of 408 symbols. Circles bisected by slashes, triangles with crossbars, arrows pointing left, letter-like shapes, an inky mosaic that filled two-thirds of the page. At its conclusion, the ultimatum read, I like killing people because it is so much fun. It is more fun than killing wild game in the forest because man is the most dangerous animal of all. Brown called her supervisor, a team of editors and crime reporters huddled around her desk. Phones rang off the hook. Within minutes, identical envelopes were discovered at the San Francisco Examiner and the smaller Vallejo Times-Herald, each carrying the same text, the same cipher, the same cross-circle signature. The Zodiac had introduced himself. Newsroom whispers turned to urgent debate. Police had not authorized public release of certain crime scene details. Would printing the letters compromise ongoing investigations? Yet the potential payoff loomed larger. The cipher could harbor clues to the killer's identity. Linguistic patterns hinting at educational level. Symbol frequencies revealing letter substitutions. Even statistical anomalies suggesting zip code or profession. And most of all, the killer threatened more victims if editors balked at publication. By mid-morning, editorial boards convened. At the Chronicle, veteran crime writer Paul Avery argued passionately, we owe it to the public to get this out. If someone with ciphers savvy can solve it, maybe we stop the next attack. Vallejo publisher Kathleen Kennedy, who had lost a classmate to the earlier shootings, later recalled, quote, we trembled, but we knew the alternative was to remain silent and risk more bloodshed.
My name is Amanda. I work with women who are trying to quit smoking. And I have some tips for you in case you're pregnant or thinking about having a baby. First thing is, keep trying to quit. Or better yet, don't start smoking. It can cause premature birth, which can then increase the risk of your baby having developmental delays, problems with eyesight, breathing, and more. So don't give up. There are people like me who are here to support you because I know what can happen if you don't quit. Your baby could be born 2 months early and weigh only 3 pounds. She could be in the NICU for almost a month, put in an incubator and fed through a feeding tube that goes through her nose down into her little stomach. I know that because I smoked while I was pregnant, and that's what happened to my little baby. I quit. You can too.
Quit your way. Call 1-877-YOU-CAN-NOW or visit TobaccoFreeFlorida.com. Developed by CDC.
Thus, that afternoon, editions carried the Zodiac's demands unredacted. The pages printed the letter in 12-point Courier font, double-spaced with no editorial commentary, beyond a box note explaining that the killer's threat and cryptogram were published in the interest of public safety. Headline banners read simply, The Zodiac Speaks, and Cryptic Pact or Fatal Refusal. Across the bay, thousands of readers saw those symbols for the first time. High school math clubs seized them as weekend puzzles, college linguistics students formed overnight cipher teams, amateur radio operators speculated on linkage to known codes. Within days, the Zodiac cipher became both the region's greatest mystery and its most pervasive fear. No longer confined to park turnoffs and telephone hotlines, the killer had summoned the public into his blood-stained game of wits. The Zodiac employed exactly 32 unique symbols, a blend of letters, A through Z, numerals 1 through 5, and 6 abstract shapes, cross circles, slashes, and geometric glyphs. Frequency analysis shows the most common symbol appears 32 times, likely representing vowel sounds E or A, while the rarest appears only 6 times, perhaps denoting Q or Z. The killer arranged his symbols in a 20 by 20 grid, filling the first 18 rows completely and leaving the final 2 rows mainly blank, except for the cross circle emblem in the bottom right corner, the Zodiac signature. He specified Courier 12-point double-spaced, insisting editors maintain line breaks and spacing exactly. Any alteration, he threatened, would provoke further violence. Uh, Heat map overlays reveal clusters of high-frequency symbols at row beginnings, suggesting poem-like structures or short declarative sentences. And then, cursor highlights show repeating sequences of three symbols every seventh column, possibly encoding common words like and or the. Modern cryptanalysis approach such puzzles with statistical modeling, chi-square tests for distribution uniformity, and Monte Carlo simulations to test random alignments. One retired Rotarian said, quote, "We thought it might be space, but it was clearly a letter placeholder. Then we noticed two symbols and never appeared consecutively. That gave away a null symbol, like a filler to confuse frequency accounts." Everybody was in on trying to solve this code. Would we actually get a real message from it, or would we not? The story continues right after a word from our sponsor. Hey folks, real talk. How many of you are using public Wi-Fi right now? Maybe at a coffee shop, an airport, hotel lobby? If that's you, I've got news. Your data is not as safe as you think it is. Hackers love public Wi-Fi. It's basically a buffet for stealing passwords, browsing history, even your financial information. And that's where NordVPN comes in. NordVPN is your personal digital bodyguard. It locks down your internet connection with military-grade encryption and hides your IP address, so no one, and I mean no one, can see what you're doing online. Not your internet provider, not advertisers, not cyber criminals. It's total privacy with just one click. And get this, they're not just secure, they're fast. I'm talking next level stream 4K without buffering kind of fast. With over 6,000 servers in more than 110 countries, you can connect anywhere, anytime, without sacrificing speed. Whether you're traveling, working from home, or just want to binge your favorite shows that aren't available in your region, NordVPN has you covered. Unblock content, avoid throttling, and browse like you're anywhere in the world. And don't worry about tech headaches. NordVPN is super easy to use. Open the app, tap one button, and boom, you're protected. Works on your phone, laptop, tablet, even your smart TV. No complicated setup, no learning curve. They also have a strict no-logs policy, which means your data isn't being tracked, stored, or shared. Your activity is your business and only your business, period. Now here's where it gets really good. Right now, NordVPN is hooking up our listeners with an exclusive detail. Use the link in the description to get up to 76% off a 2-year plan, plus up to a $50 Amazon gift card. You're getting elite online security and a free Amazon gift card. That's a complete win. And hey, it's risk-free. NordVPN offers a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you try it out and decide it's not for you, no worries. You get your money back. No questions asked. So do yourself a favor. Protect your devices. Protect your data. And stop leaving your digital front door wide open. Use the link in the description today and take advantage of this epic deal while it lasts. Across the street, the Vallejo Rotary Club's weekly luncheon unfolded in the Masonic Temple basement, a modest room with round tables, folding chairs, and a small podium. On August 1st, news of the cipher arrived with that morning's papers. Among the attendees were Donald Harden, a CHP dispatcher by day and amateur cryptographer by hobby, carrying pocket notebooks filled with substitution ciphers from old magazines. Betty Harden, Don's wife and a local high school language arts teacher whose love of wordplay complemented her husband's symbol chasing. Dr. William H. Ellsworth, naval engineer who worked on early missile guidance systems, bringing mathematical precision to pattern analysis. And Alice Smith, a mathematics instructor fascinated by group theory and frequency distributions. Over tea and sandwiches, they resolved to tackle the Zodiac cipher themselves. Donald converted the cipher into typewritten sheets, marking each symbol with a numeric code. Betty created frequency charts, hand-drawing bar graphs of symbol occurrences, Ellsworth applied statistical models, testing whether symbol distribution matched expected English letter frequencies. Alice tested initial mapping hypotheses, such as if symbol X equals E, does a pattern yield recognizable three-letter words? As days turned into nights, their kitchen table became a war room. Post-its covered walls, chalkboards brimmed with partial decryptions. Coffee cups multiplied. And on August 8th, 7 days after the cipher's public release, the Rotarians achieved their breakthrough. Working late into the evening, Don scribbled possible substitutions into grid's first row. Symbol A is, Symbol A is I, B is L, D is K, E is E. When read aloud, the sequence shocked them. I like. Hearts pounding, the team refined the mapping. Soon the first full phrase emerged. I like killing people because it is so much fun. Following lines yield more revelations. Then killing wild game. Man is the most dangerous animal. When I die, I will be reborn in paradise. And they focused, in the later investigation, focused on paradise being spelled as para and then D-I-C-E instead of D-I-S-E. Then frustration. The final 16 symbols stubbornly resisted all hypotheses. Though they spelled out English, the ragged edge of the puzzle refused to yield the words they craved, the killer's name. That night, Don called Chronicles editor Paul Avery, saying, quote, it's Don Harden, we have the cipher. The next morning, Chronicle front page carried both the original symbols and the translated English text, crediting Vallejo's amateur codebreakers and setting the Rotarians into local fame. The Hardens modestly declined pundit panels, preferring anonymity, yet their effort demonstrated the power of civic engagement, ordinary citizens applying their unique skills to public safety. Their breakthrough cemented the Zodiac cipher in crime history lore and inspired future generations, amateur and professional, to believe that no puzzle is too dark or too complex to confront. The decrypted message reverberated across the Bay Area and beyond, and when completed, it said, quote, I like killing people because it is so much fun. It is more fun than killing wild game in the forest, because man is the most dangerous animal of all. To kill something gives me the most thrilling experience. It is even better than getting your rocks off with a girl. The best part of it is that when I die, I will be reborn in paradise, and all the I have killed will become my slaves. I will not give you my name because you will try to slow down or stop my collecting of slaves for my afterlife. Newspapers printed the full translation in bold type. Radio talk shows dedicated entire hours to debating its psychology. Was the Zodiac a psychopathic thrill seeker, or did he harbor apocalyptic delusions of an afterlife tribe? Schools held emergency assemblies. Some parents even wrote to governors pleading for martial law patrols. Detectives listened to the translation's emphasis on fun and games, connecting it to juvenile delinquency profiles they had studied. Behavioral analysts noted the sexual undertone, better than getting your rocks off, seeing it as a sign of eroticized violence. The promise of rebirth and paradise, suggesting religious fanaticism or an escapist fantasy of power beyond death. Despite the euphoria over the main text, investigators and codebreakers remained fixated on the last 16 symbols. Overhead shots in the newsroom showed those blank cells looming like cavities in a smile. Had the Zodiac deliberately omitted his name, or was the final phrase a personalized cipher only he could read? The blank space took on mythical status, the missing puzzle piece that might never align. The translation's shocking frankness, I like killing people because it's so much fun, echoed in pop culture for decades. True crime writers quoted it verbatim. Graffiti artists stenciled it on urban walls. Punk bands sampled its radio broadcast. Became a morbid mantra, capturing the public's horror and fascination in two short lines. When the Chronicle, Examiner, and Vallejo Times-Herald simultaneously publicized the cipher and its translation on August 9, 1969, they set new precedents in crime reporting, balancing urgent public interest with ethical strength. restraint, I mean. Under the banner headline, Zodiac Speaks, His Thrill and Blood, the Chronicle printed the full decoded text alongside front page articles on code breaking. The managing editor at the time wrote an editorial explaining the decision, saying, quote, "This newspaper does not take orders from murderers, but when refusing to publish a killer's words may cost lives, we publish in the public interest." Crime reporter Paul Avery contributed an illustrated guide to symbol frequencies and what they suggest about the killer's literacy and motives. The Chronicle also provided phone lines for tips, staffed 24 hours by volunteers and off-duty officers. The Examiner took a slightly different tack, a front-page box labeled Zodiac's own words, with the translation printed in red type to emphasize its horror. An accompanying feature examined the moral quandary. Should newspapers ever cooperate with extortionist demands? Editor-in-Chief Dorothy Bridges wrote candidly, quote, "We feel the burden of complicity, yet silence against a threat of more murder is a higher disservice." The Examiner also launched a mobile news van in Vallejo, broadcasting nightly summaries and urging viewers to check mail and car doors for suspicious envelopes. In Vallejo, the Times-Herald took a small-town approach. Publisher Kathleen Kennedy ran the translation on page 1, then devoted page 2 entirely to victims' photos and family statements. Quote, "Behind these words are real lives." Local mental health experts contributed columns on coping with fear, while school officials listed curfews. The paper's measures tone earned praise from civic leaders who credited the Times-Herald with guiding the community through panic without sensationalizing it. The joint publication prompted national debate. The American Society of Newspaper Editors convened an emergency session to debate guidelines for printing threats and extortion letters. Broadcasters discussed live reading of coded threats versus risk of amplifying them. Journalism professors cited the Zodiac case in ethics classes, using it to illustrate the delicate balance between informing the public and abetting a criminal's publicity campaign. These editorial decisions resonated for years. When similar scenarios arose, letters from cult leaders, ransom notes from bombers, newsrooms often referred back to 1969. Publish with context and safety advisories, avoid sensational headlines, and give victims' voices equal prominence. The Zodiac cipher thus reshaped American journalism practice, codifying principles still taught in media ethic courses today. The Zodiac's published confession triggered waves of public reaction, fear, solidarity, and profound behavioral shifts across the Bay Area. Within days, block captains in San Francisco, Vallejo, and Napa organized rotating street patrols. Volunteers carried flashlights and two-way radios, convening nightly to report suspicious activity. In Marin County, retired CHP officer Tom Reese led Zodiac awareness seminars at community centers, teaching families how to react if approached by strangers. Elementary schools staged drills. Children practiced dialing 911 and memorizing home addresses. San Francisco taxi companies moved swiftly. Within a week, CYT cabs installed plexiglass partitions. Drivers received panic button badges linked directly to dispatch. A striking new sticker appeared on every cab. Dial home safely. Zodiac Hotline 415-555-1969. Though the number was symbolic, the initiative boosted passenger confidence and reduced driver anxiety. Thousands of gas station attendants attended CPR and first aid workshops, learning how to respond if attacked. Dozens of stations installed emergency push-button lights, red bulbs atop poles, that triggered direct calls to CHP dispatch. A 1969 CHP memo lauded the measure as a vital retrofit sparked by the Zodiac's terror. Radio DJs at KGO and KSAN began airing daily Zodiac updates. Concise bulletins on code break progress, police appeals, and safety advisories. Nightclub owners started offering Zodiac watches for evening patrons, security escorts to parking lots. The shift from private fear to communal vigilance showed the killer's paradoxical power. By terrorizing individuals, he united entire communities in mutual protection. Local service clubs held Zodiac Solidarity dinners, fundraisers for victim support charities, and crime prevention scholarships. Vallejo Rotary donated proceeds for trauma counseling programs named for Cecilia Shepherd. High school math clubs hosted cipher nights where students worked on code breaking and invited local detectives to speak on forensic careers, turning public fright into educational opportunity. The Zodiac's publication-driven campaign forced law enforcement to pivot from reactive patrols to strategic multi-agency collaboration. Within 2 weeks of the cipher's solve, the Vallejo, Solano, Napa, and San Francisco agencies formalized a weekly Zodiac task force. Commanders from each jurisdiction met at rotating locations, sharing tip logs, forensic findings, and witness statements. The FBI Behavioral Science Unit assigned an agent to consult on profiling updates. Detectives distinguished between the Zodiac's MO, his choice of weapon, victims, and locations, and his signature, the cross circle, the ciphers, the media taunts. Identifying this signature clarified that seemingly isolated attacks might belong to the Zodiac series. Bullet casings from a 1970 attempted killing in Contra Costa County, for instance, were reviewed against the Zodiac's known .22 arsenal. The National Integrated Ballistic Information Network system, launched in the 90s, retroactively matched preserved .22 shell casings from Lake Herman Road and Blue Rock Springs, confirming consistent striation patterns. Though the search did not point to a registered weapon owner, it bolstered the case for a single serial offender, not copycats. Dr. John Douglas, who later founded the FBI's Behavioral Science Unit, revised his earlier Zodiac profile with data gleaned from the cipher's content. Emphasis on thrill-seeking violence and grandiose fantasies led investigators to re-interview individuals with known narcissistic traits. Teachers, military veterans, amateur actors. While Arthur Leigh Allen remained a leading suspect, subsequent alibi checks and DNA testing failed to tie him conclusively to the letters. By the mid-70s, fingerprint classification had migrated to AFIS, the Automated Fingerprint Identification System. Investigators submitted latent print lifts from shears and letters, though mixed quality prints yielded no definitive matches. In the 80s, DNA profiling techniques were applied to preserve blood on the Carmanghia seat. Though contamination rendered results inconclusive, each technological leap required meticulous re-examination of decades-old evidence, underlining the enduring relevance of the Zodiac case and driving forensic innovation. Zodiac's first published cipher did far more than reveal chilling words. It launched a cultural phenomenon and forever changed American crime fighting. Before 1969, serial killers operated mostly in shadows, their narratives confined to local newsprint. The Zodiac inverted this model. He sought the spotlight, wielding newspapers and radio like weapons. In response, law enforcement agencies and media institutions codified new protocols, balancing transparency with caution, crafting ethical guidelines, and forging closer collaboration. Journalists today study the Zodiac case as foundational in crime reporting ethics courses. They learn to frame perpetrators' words responsibly, give equal space to victims' voices, and avoid letting criminals' own narratives dominate headlines. The principle that we do not negotiate with murderers, but we do inform the public in hopes of prevention, remains a touchstone. Modern cold case units routinely revisit unsolved crimes with techniques unimagined in 1969. Genetic genealogy, hyperspectral imaging of inks, AI-assisted cipher analysis, the Zodiac case occupies an honored place in forensic science textbooks, its frustrations and breakthroughs shaping new generations of investigators. From Robert Graysmith's best-selling books to David Fincher's 2007 film Zodiac, from podcast deep dives such as mine to street art, cross circles on urban walls, the Zodiac narrative persists in pop culture. Yet, when repurposed for art or fashion, the original victim's humanity can fade. Responsible storytellers counter this by foregrounding survivor stories, counseling resources, and ethical disclaimers. Despite partial cipher solutions, DNA advances, and extensive profiling, the Zodiac's identity remains unconfirmed. An unfinished circle, six blank murders, unanswered cipher fragments, and the promised slaves from my afterlife symbolizes a case that still defies closure, yet hope endures. As new leads emerge through genealogical databases and AI ciphers, the possibility of a final breakthrough remains alive. As the dust settled on the Zodiac's first cipher and the Bay Area braced itself for more terror, one question loomed larger than ever. Who could strike so coldly, yet crave the spotlight so desperately? In our next episode, the Farron McGue case and escalation, we'll return to that sweltering July evening at Blue Rock Springs Park, where Darlene Farron's life was cut short, and Michael McGue became the Zodiac's first living witness. You'll see how forensic ballistics and coroner reports began to link separate shootings into a single methodical killer. By episode's end, viewers will understand how the Zodiac evolved from a hidden shooter to a taunting adversary who wasn't content to lurk in the darkness. He wanted to escalate, leave clues, and to prove he was more than just another nameless murderer. So don't miss it. And with that, let me know your thoughts in the comment section below. And as always, give us a thumbs up if you like our video. Hit that subscribe button down below. Hit the bell notification button to be notified of future videos. And of course, if you want to support the channel, you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/TCNS or use that QR code that you see on the screen and just scan that. And as always, thank you so much for watching and listening. We'll see you next time.